AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. There were gains across the board in the grain markets, with new crop corn and soybeans coming along for the full ride today. And something happened in the livestock markets that I don't think has happened for 20 years.
Live from 52 Degrees Tuesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll hear from Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. Then we'll have a conversation with Andrew Jackson of Producers Hedge. Right after the news with Tyne Morgan, Joe Vaklevic will talk price action. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right. Thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate that. Welcome to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us. Let's bring in Tyne Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report. How you doing, Tyne?
You know, Chip, you know on TV when you watch the NASCAR race, right?
Yeah.
And you're totally zoned in and you see them all buckled in with like the full harness suit inside the car.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what we need right now to endure these commodity markets. Crazy.
You got it. You got it. Corn market in the overnight session, it was impressive, but boy, when things got started in for the day session, wow, took off. We saw that July contract trade through $7 today. Just incredible moves that we are seeing. And like I said, I think this hasn't happened in the livestock markets since 2001. I think that's right. I've got to do a little bit more work to confirm it. But June hogs closed above June live cattle futures.
I mean, don't they call that the 20-year cycle?
I guess.
I don't know. I haven't been in this business long enough to know what the 20-year cycle would be, Chip. But oh my gosh, we've been so focused on corn. The hogs. I mean, it has been so impressive. I had a friend from South Dakota just text and said, "Let's just get this over with. Let's just get to $8 corn." I've heard from so many seed dealers around here that farmers are switching up here in South Dakota like crazy. And you know, I didn't think that we would see a big acreage shift, but with these prices, Chip, I guess anything's possible.
Yeah. That's exactly right, Tyne. That is exactly right. When we get into markets that are as dynamic as these are, anything is possible. We need to keep that all in mind. Okay, hopefully, the Surgeon General will not be on stage with President Biden in about 10 minutes, and he will be on AgriTalk with us to talk about a new effort from the Biden administration. Hopefully we'll be able to get to that. But for now, let's get to the market news. What you got?
Yeah, there's spillover support from aggressive gains in corn. That helped wheat prices push to the upside today, Chip. Now, spring wheat seedings advanced to 49% complete as of May 2nd. That was a 21-point gain from the previous week. North Dakota, those farmers set at 42% done with spring wheat seedings compared to the five-year average of 20% done by May 2nd. Winter wheat crop conditions slipped slightly with 42% of the crop rated good. That compares to 43% in that same category last week. And you look at July soft red winter wheat futures, those posted an inside trading day with a low range open and a high range close. July hard red winter wheat was 10¾ cents higher at 6.99¼. And then you had September spring wheat, Chip, that was 8¾ cents higher at 7.71.
Right. Yeah. Big moves today. No question about it. And that seeding pace on the wheat, well ahead of the five-year average on spring wheat.
Yeah, well, farmers do seem to be in a rush to plant now $7 corn. July corn futures traded through resistance at $7 before setting back to close below that pivotal level. Still, old crop corn saw a low range open and a high range close to build upside momentum. Dry conditions in Brazil and declining Safrina corn crop estimates provided support for today's corn rally. We talked about that yesterday, Chip, but some market watchers argue the flow of money to the long side of the corn market is really the only factor that's driving prices to the upside. USDA says 46% of the U.S. corn crop is planted. That's up 29 points from the previous week and 10 points ahead of the five-year average for May 2nd. That beats last year's yearly record jump that we saw in corn planting. Yeah. Hey, Chip, July corn futures, those were 17¼ cents higher at 6.96¾. September corn jumped 18½ cents, and December corn closed at 5.80½, up 17 and a half cents.
Iowa's got 69% of the corn crop planted. That is up 49 points from last week. It's shocking to me.
Apparently, you need a rain, Chip.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, soybean futures, Chip, those were pulled to the upside by both soybean meal and bean oil. The strength in soy product markets came after USDA reported that crushers processed 188.2 million bushels of beans in March. That was slightly below trade expectations. Now, November soybean futures posted the second close above 1350. The first close above that level was on April 26. The low range open and high range close points November beans to a test of resistance at the contract high of 1384 and three quarters. USDA reported yesterday that 24% of the bean crop is planted. That is easily ahead of the 11% five-year average. July bean futures 14 and a quarter cents higher at 1538 and a quarter. November bean futures closed at 1363 and a quarter. That was up 18 and a half cents.
Yeah, big moves there. Clearly the momentum is to the upside and gaining momentum.
Well, cotton plantings, those are 16% complete. That actually matches the five-year average. July cotton today was 69 points lower at 87.17, and December cotton slipped 14 points to 85.06. And we heard some farmers in that cotton patch in West Texas did get rain overnight and this morning. Welcome news there. And there were sharp gains in corn futures that weighed on the cattle complex. Chip, you talked about it. June live cattle were 227 and a half lower at 113.02 and a half, and October cattle fell a buck 20 to 121.75. August feeders fell $3.62 and a half cents to 143.17 and a half, and June lean hogs 90 cents higher at 113.55. August hogs gained 105 to close at 108.47 and a half. My gosh,
crazy.
These markets are crazy.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Tyne, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks, Chip.
All right, that's Tyne Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report. Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain, joins us. Joe, this corn market, it's outperforming anything that I expected.
It's pretty unbelievable. I think that maybe the biggest driver of prices here short term is the situation in Brazil. The second corn crop, pretty much all areas have been very dry, and maybe more importantly, there is like no relief in the forecast at all out through the late part of May. I mean, through the 20th, I think is the map I'm looking at right now. That's a big deal, and every group out there is slashing crop estimates. It's very likely that the crop will end up being a good 300 or 400 million bushels below what USDA has printed on their balance sheet right now, maybe even more than that. So I think that this is just an additional bullish factor that the market is in the process of discounting here.
This is a fascinating market, no doubt about it. The bear spreads worked in the beans today. It kind of surprised me that it actually worked out that way.
I think it's normal volatility in the spreads. Okay. I don't read a 4 or 5 cent move in like July versus no beans as being the end of the world. The thing with the beans is that's different than corn is that you don't really have like this fresh bullish news. Like I'd say the Brazil thing in corn is fresh bullish news. The fact that shipments in corn are so strong and stronger than a lot of people thought is kind of fresh bullish news. A lot of the stuff in beans is older news. I mean, we're really tight. We know bean oil surging. It's kind of like the same bullish stuff has led us to this spot.
Yeah, exactly. I get that and hear you loud and clear on that. Thanks, Joe. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep, see you, Chip.
All right, Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. Coming up next, Vice Admiral Dr. Vivek Murthy, the U.S. Surgeon General, right here on AgriTalk. You might already know that POET produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know that POET uses the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate, and that means even more reliable domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world, they are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. poet believes in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could be with us today, and especially right now, for a conversation with Vice Admiral Dr. Vivek Murthy. He is the U.S. Surgeon General, and Dr. Murthy joins us right now. Surgeon General Murthy, welcome to AgriTalk.
Well, thank you, Chip. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you could make time for us today. And I've got to say thank you. Thank you for your service to the country, because this is your second role, your second term as Surgeon General, and we appreciate very much all of your efforts. Very impressive. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate that, Chip. It's certainly a blessing to be able to serve the country, especially at a time like this during this pandemic crisis. And right. I'm eager to do everything I can to help.
That's awesome. Thank you. Okay. What's the latest on the status, on the vaccine recommendations? What is the progress report?
Well, overall, the progress report is good, Chip. You know, we have made tremendous progress in vaccinating the country to date. We have, if you look at people actually above the age of 65, you've gotten at least one dose of the vaccine into more than 80% of people over the age of 65, which is pretty extraordinary. And we have about 70% of our seniors who are now fully vaccinated. That means they've had either one dose of the Johnson & Johnson or two doses of the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine and have allowed 2 weeks to elapse to build that, build some immunity. So we've got many people in our country who are now protected, who are older. Where we've got to do more work is in younger populations. And the reason that we focus on older populations, because that's where we were seeing the primary risk in terms of hospitalizations and death.
Right.
So we've saved a lot of lives, I'm confident, because of this vaccination campaign. But look, even though we've got nearly 150 million people who have had at least one shot, we still have millions more who need to get vaccinated, and that's going to be our pathway out of this pandemic.
Well, and I believe that President Biden is making some comments today about setting a goal of getting 70% of Americans with at least one vaccination by, is it July 1 or July 4th, something like that?
That's right. Yeah, so today President Biden will be announcing the next goal, which is to ensure that by July 4th, we have 70% of adults in America who have had at least one shot. Keep in mind, we have a little over 50% of adults in the country right now with at least one shot. He also, by July 4th, wants us to have 160 million adults who are fully vaccinated. And right now, that number is a little over 100 million. What this means, ultimately, is that we're going to need to vaccinate to deliver an additional 100 million shots to people over the next 60 days. So that's until July 4th. And so it's a lot of work that we still have to do. But if we can reach that goal, that will take us one giant step closer toward being able to resume the activities that so many of us enjoyed before the pandemic, which is what we all want.
Okay. What's the vaccine supply and how does it compare to the demand that is in the country right now? Of course, there are many reports that there's a hesitancy among the population to get the vaccine, and that there's plenty of vaccine out there, right?
Well, the good news for, you know, here in America is that we have done a good job on bolstering our supply. So we do have more and more vaccine that's available for those who want it. And we also, very importantly, have more places where you can get a vaccine. So now there are over 40,000 pharmacies in the country that now have the vaccine to offer. We have community vaccination sites. We have community health centers where we've actually delivered directly vaccine to from the federal government. And we've got more primary care doctors who are getting vaccine directly in their offices so they can give it to patients. Today, what the president's also announcing is that the administration will be providing more direct funding and support to rural health clinics to support outreach, as well as direct allocation of vaccines to rural health clinics so that they can directly vaccinate their own patients. So all of that, I think, is positive because it means that we have more supply, more access points, which makes it easier ultimately to get vaccinated. But Chip, one thing I want to just make sure I emphasize here is we've seen a lot of news stories about people being hesitant to get the vaccine.
Yes.
But what we're finding actually is the people who haven't gotten vaccinated yet, it's a combination of a few things. Some people have questions, which is important to answer. And we want people to get answers from reliable sources like their doctors or the nurses that take care of them. But we also know that some people are wondering if it's really that important for them to get vaccinated. Maybe they're young and healthy and they think, hey, I'm not at high risk of a bad outcome. Do I really need to get this vaccine? Or maybe they're working two or three jobs and don't have transportation to get to a vaccine center. And so it's just still too hard to do it. And I want to point that out because, you know, we're trying to work on all three fronts, make sure that we're working closely with doctors and nurses around the country, as well as pastors and other faith leaders to help get information to their communities. But we're also trying to improve the number of access points so that it's easier and easier, hopefully, over the weeks ahead for people to get vaccines in their pharmacy, in their doctor's office, in their neighborhoods.
Okay. The hesitancy. Well, let me ask you this first, Dr. Murthy. If someone has had COVID-19, should they be getting the vaccine?
Well, that's a really great question, Chip. And the answer is yes, and here's why. Because it turns out that the immunity that you get, the protection from a natural infection, is actually not as robust. It's not as strong as the protection you get from the vaccine. So you're more likely to be at risk for reinfection if you got naturally infected than if you get a vaccine. That's why we're asking everyone to get vaccinated regardless of their prior infection.
Okay. The rural community, the middle of the country, how are we doing as far as the most vulnerable populations getting the vaccine?
Well, you know, overall, we've made a lot of progress in rural communities, but our numbers are still, you know, we still got a ways to go to get to the vast majority of folks in rural areas protected from COVID-19. I think there have been a few challenges. You know, one is that obviously we know that rural areas are different from urban areas. People are more spread out. It's not always as easy to travel to one location that's close to everyone to get a vaccine. And so we've got to work through some of those logistical barriers, which is why the funding for the rural health clinics and for these mobile units is so important. But we also know that everyone, look, gets information from different sources. We're a big country. Not everyone listens to the same news station or radio station. And that means that we've got to do more work in getting information out, particularly through people's doctors, which is why one of the projects that we launched, you know, from my office and other offices in the government was something called the COVID-19 Community Corps, where we bring together doctors and nurses and faith leaders and local business leaders and others to get the accurate information that they know they and their communities want, and then to be able to share that with them. Because in addition to people trusting the doctors and nurses who take care of them, we know that about 50% of people say that they would take the advice of a family member or a friend when it comes to making a decision on the vaccine. And what that means is that even if you don't have a medical degree or a nursing degree, you can still be a vital force in helping people understand that the vaccines we have for COVID-19 are a way to protect them against the COVID and a way ultimately for us to help turn this pandemic around.
Okay. When it comes to health issues, I've learned over the years to never discount anybody's hesitancy or concern because it is a personal issue for them. To those that are showing a hesitancy to get the vaccine, what is your message to them?
Well, number one, I would say this. Look, all of our health is personal to us. And if you've got questions, you absolutely have a right to get those questions answered. You should, because ultimately it's your health. And here are a couple of things to keep in mind about the vaccine. Number one, just recognize that 90% of doctors in this country have either gotten the vaccine or are planning to get it as soon as possible. That tells you the faith that the medical profession has in this vaccine. Second, keep in mind that these vaccines, Even though it seems like they were developed on a quick time frame, the technology behind them has been in development for decades, for many, many years. And we are lucky enough to see the culmination of that research. And these vaccines have been studied rigorously in clinical trials. And what we've seen now with, again, nearly 150 million people having received a dose, at least one dose of the vaccine, is we're seeing that the side effect profile remains really strong in terms of safety, and the effectiveness remains extraordinarily strong and high as well. So that's what you want to see, high effectiveness and very low risk in any vaccine that you take. That's what we're seeing here. And finally, just keep this in mind. I know that many people are worried about the side effects of the vaccine, but first of all, the vast majority of people don't have side effects from this vaccine. And those that do, what they tend to experience are 1 to 2 days of flu-like symptoms, meaning fatigue, maybe low-grade fever, a body ache. But that lasts for about a day or two, and then it goes away, and then they feel pretty good afterward. What they're left with is protection from the vaccine. So just remember, the vaccine is our pathway to protection, and it's how we're going to turn this pandemic around.
All right, Dr. Murthy, we are out of time. Thank you so much for making time for AgriTalk.
Of course, it's great to be with you. Take care, stay safe, and hope we get to talk again.
It's time for Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. Modest changes in winter wheat CCI ratings. The Pro Farmer Crop Condition Index for the HRW improved 1.1 points. The SRW slipped 0.4 points. Dr. Michael Cordonier says the risk is to the downside on Brazil's Safrinha corn crop. Ethanol is to bear the brunt of this year's smaller Brazilian sugarcane crop. A solid rise in Indonesian palm oil production is expected. Powell comments on uneven economic recovery. The Treasury lifts borrowing estimate to $463 billion for the quarter. Seaboard Foods says it needs more time to slow down the slaughter speeds at its pork processing facilities. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Andrew Jackson from Producer's Hedge standing by, getting ready for a conversation. First, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed today. July HRW wheat was 10 and 3/4 cents higher at 699 and a quarter. July SRW jumped 8 and 3/4 cents to 726 and 3 quarters. July corn, 17 and a quarter cents higher, 696 and 3 quarters. Dece corn, 580 and a half, up 17 and a half cents. July bean futures, 14 and a quarter cents higher at 1538 and a quarter. November bean futures closed at 1363 and a quarter, up 18 and a half cents. December cotton slipped 14 points to 85.06. June live cattle, 227 and a half lower, 113.02 and a half. August feeders were $3.62 and a half cents lower at 143.17 and a half. And June lean hogs, 90 cents higher at 113.55. It just kind of freaks me out to see June live cattle at 113.02 and a half and June lean hogs at 113.55. It doesn't happen very often. Okay, let's get into the conversation right now with Andrew Jackson, the Grainiac from Producer's Hedge. How you doing, Andrew? It's good to talk with you again.
Hey, same here. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. How things going down your way?
Oh, pretty good. We've had a good start on planting. Not seasonably cool. We're running into a
Andrew, here. Before you go any further, I should tell people where you're at. You're down in what we would call the Southeast Corn Belt, okay?
That's right.
Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, maybe the new Corn Belt. We're down in Kentucky here, and a lot of our area is fairly new to grain production, really. When you started seeing the commodity boom in 08 through maybe 11, 12, 13, that's when a lot of these acres started coming into production.
Right, right. Soil moisture is not an issue for you right now, is it?
No, we're in good shape. We've had pretty decent weather, had a good start on planting here. I think maybe the USDA might have even missed us to the downside. I think maybe we're further along than they think. But now we got some moisture and decent temps. So,
okay, when you have been talking with your clients in that area down there, Andrew, was there much shakeup on acres from their initial thoughts to where they're at right now?
I would say the net change is going to be marginal. I mean, you've got some guys that maybe were more sensitive to fertilized prices and maybe backed off on the corn. Some guys are maybe closer to a bean processor and vice versa. So I would say the net shakeout's not going to really show much change.
Gotcha. What do you make of these markets, Andrew? I mean, this corn market is the most it's as dynamic a corn market as I've ever seen.
Well, when I started in the grain industry in Jeffersonville, Indiana in September 2010, I don't think the market did anything but rally for the next 3 years. And this last fall, I remember talking to a former coworker and telling him, man, this feels a lot like 2010, coming in after, an 09 crop that, it'd been underestimated. And so anyway, we had it just had kind of the same feel. I guess the long and short of it is, great opportunities here. I don't want to discourage anybody from making profitable sales. But at the same time, man, from a short speculative standpoint, I do not want to stand in front of that train today.
Right. So talk to me about the cash market and some of the dynamics that you're seeing in the cash market your way.
Well, so, going back to the beginning of my career here, if you look at, 12, 13, especially, back in the, good old days, the cash markets present some really unique challenges when we start seeing inverses like this. An inverse when the front month is a premium to the back month. If you look right now, and I realize we're in the delivery right now, but if you look, the May corn contract is about a 48 cent premium to the July. And if you're a trader, it can really be a challenge, but it can also present really nice opportunities. If you're a producer, though, there's sometimes where you think, wow, this is great. And it does present some opportunities, but there are also a lot of times where opportunities are hidden and maybe you leave a lot of money on the table. For example, setting basis versus the front month inverse and then rolling to a back month. If you want to be long from a speculative standpoint, and a lot of producers get caught up in saying, well, I'm selling flat price, 7.25 corn or whatever that number is. It's like, well, had we established basis, a few weeks ago and rolled it at the proper time, maybe we left 30, 40 cents on the table.
Right.
So that's something, I mean, because like I've had a couple of growers tell me, hey, we're bidding, this guy over here is bidding 25 over the July the other day and today, and the other day he was bidding 25 over the May. What happened? So the buyers right now are really doing their best to take that spread.
Yeah. This bull spread, the way we've got the old crop trading at the premium to the inverse that you've been talking about here, going back to when you started, 2010, 2011, we had what I called the ethanol carry in the market all the time. It was the ethanol facilities had a premium in the back month contracts just in an effort to encourage you to store that corn until the ethanol guys need it. Is that kind of a thing of the past now, Andrew?
Well, I think there are some seasonal tendencies, with the I was always of the opinion when the farmer wants to sell you corn or whoever, if somebody wants to be selling it to you, you probably should be trying to buy it. Now, yeah. I do know that there are some places that are notorious for maybe overbooking the front month. So they'll show in a lot of cases they will actually, keep show a flat bid and they'll keep getting you to sell the front month. Well, you can't deliver, you can't execute it on it, so you wind up carrying it for them anyway. We're not seeing probably as much of that anymore, and maybe some of that has to do with their ability to lock in margins on the forward curve.
Yeah. How do you think the end users are doing? Have they got coverage that they need now?
I think it's a mixed bag. I mean, there are some users that are no bid, but I think there are some issues here, especially in the Southeast. I think what happened, I think it's kind of a unique situation this year. I think a lot of corn, first of all, in this area went to the river that normally wouldn't do that. If you had an opportunity during harvest to lock in 450 cash corn, those were the best prices we'd seen in several years, right? So there were a lot of trucks that were 100, 150 miles from the river that normally would never work that way that they did. Well, the feed mills during that time, in a lot of cases, they're not very active marketers, active merchandisers, and maybe they just kept thinking it would get better. And so the farmer kept selling to the river, and of course we know exports have been good, right? So it just kept sucking it up. So I think my personal opinion is the end user in Kentucky is going to probably better be getting their hands around it in some way, shape, or form. Now, flat price may wind up working in their favor with the inverse, but just the availability of the crop and the miles that may be on the corn by the time it gets to them is what will hurt them.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Okay, interesting. All right, I'm just going to switch gears on you here just a little bit, Andrew. We got the supply and demand report coming next week. What are you going to watch most closely in that update?
Well, I think we want to keep an eye on the corn carryout. I mean, we're basically, essentially 100% sold on corn. We're making really good progress here on shipments. This past week, we were, I think, overshot the needed pace by about 25 million bushels. Week to week. So it doesn't look like we're going to have any problem getting all that corn out the door. Kind of interested to see what's going to happen with soybeans, just because, we've been maintaining that 120 carryout the last couple of reports. But also, one thing I'm interested in, four consecutive weeks, we've missed the needed pace on export inspections. We need now about a little over 14 million bushels a week. This past week, we had about 5 million. So that's going to be interesting to see if we can make up for it, because it looks like we're probably going to go through a summer slump, as we should. I mean, that's what the market's telling you to do, put off the ownership. Will we see the back end? Will we see August shipments make up for it? Because every time we miss it by 10 million to the downside, well, we got to hit it another week by 10 million to the upside. And I think that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough in an August cash market with where the crusher is, still making money.
Yeah, yeah. This bean oil market, and to a certain degree, the bean meal market. I mean, the way that it traded today, it's certainly helping to support the bean price. But just talk specifically about bean oil. I don't know the last time, Andrew, that soybean oil has had this much influence on the overall market. It's pretty remarkable.
Well, yeah, I mean, the old trader axiom is that a bull market in soybeans is led by meal, right? And that has not been the case here. I mean, we saw the May put in an all-time high for soybean oil, I mean, of any contract, a true all-time high yesterday. Now we sold off that a little bit, but that just absolutely blows my mind. And it's just like the structure of the whole complex is maybe being challenged right now. And a lot of that maybe has to do with the current administration and future policies and all that. But it's interesting nonetheless. It's kept some really good traders on their toes.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, it has. And it seems weird to say that we're crushing beans for the oil, but it feels like that's what we're doing in many cases. We had a conversation with Donnell Rehagen, the CEO of the National Biodiesel Board, this morning on the show. Everybody, if you did not hear that, go back and listen to that conversation, because we talked about the demand, the source of the demand, the difference between renewable and bio, the differences between the West Coast and the East Coast markets, and the market right here in the middle of the country. Is a fascinating conversation with Donnell this morning. Andrew, stick around. Risk management, what strategies do you like right now? We'll cover that next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Andrew Jackson from Producers Hedge with us. Andrew, big thank you for being flexible with your timing today. Really appreciate you doing that. The conversation that we were having at the end of the last segment about biodiesel and the veg oil market, the bean oil market, it got me thinking about ethanol, and is ethanol back, and can the in next week's supply and demand report, do we see a bit of an uptick in corn going to the ethanol grind, Andrew?
Well, I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, we get another EIA report tomorrow here, right. And production has been pretty steady, pretty steadily climbing each week. So, hopefully crude can stay suspended here and help us out a little bit. But hey, I think the American consumer is ready to run this summer. So,
Andrew, we hear about pent up demand for this or pent up demand for that. And that and we hear about it. We've heard about stuff like that for a long time. And then it's always kind of disappointing. This time, I don't think it's very disappointing, Andrew. There's pent up demand and people are out there to get it, whatever it is they want.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready to take I've got three kids, all under 12, and I'm ready to get them in a car and ride for 10 hours. So if that's not pent up demand, I don't know what is.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I love that. Love it. It does feel like it is going to be a summer of surge when it comes to family outings and consumption. I don't care if we're talking about meat, fuel, whatever it is going to be a summer of consumption. I should probably throw the ever popular amber colored beverage in there as well. I got a feeling that'll be in high demand this summer. Okay. When you're talking with your clients and you talk risk management strategies, what does that conversation sound like right now, Andrew?
Well, let's first of all assume that you're lucky enough to have some old crop corn or beans sitting around. Okay. First of all, congratulations if that's the case. But this is one of the situations we haven't seen in a while where you've got as much basis and spread risk maybe as you do flat price risk.
Right.
And so one of the things I would encourage you to do, and we talked about the roll from the May to the July earlier, and that's now a 50-cent inverse. Well, that's kind of spilled milk at this point. So I do think that, there's some opportunities still here against the, I mean, you look at the July SEP. The July SEP right now is at about an 86 cent inverse, 87 cent inverse right now. One thing I would encourage everyone to do is I don't know that I'd want to play with fire and try to carry cash grain into that role.
Right.
I would probably have basis established before that thing starts to go off the board. I'm not saying that you won't get lucky, that you won't find a hot local market that's just starving, but to think that you're going to make up for that and it's going to last very long, I think you're playing with fire there. So that's one thing that I would say. I don't know that I would want to be long a crazy amount of my production at these levels, just because they're so good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with setting a floor and leaving yourself open with some options. Yeah, I mean, I know different guests talk about those different strategies all the time, a minimum price contract, buy a call, whatever. One thing that I really like that I've been using a little bit of lately is short-dated options, especially on the new crop. Because we know that prudent risk management, tells us that we need to be protecting these kind of prices. Over the long run, we know that that selling into these markets is the proper thing to do. And so if we use short dated options, one of the reasons why I like doing that is because, first of all, it cuts down on the price. The expenses isn't as great up front. Second of all, it kind of disciplines you that, hey, if you know that you need to sell 10% of your crop by the end of July, okay, go out and look at an August short dated put or something to that effect. And once that option expires, hey, your coverage is gone. We probably better go ahead and get some futures priced. And at the same time, you know that you've got a floor under that crop.
Yep.
So those are some things that I really like doing right now.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. I know that we don't build a risk management plan on the weather outlook, but I have been asking the question on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being record yields for corn and soybeans and 10 being 2012-like conditions. What's your level of weather anxiety for 2021, Andrew?
I'm probably going to split it right in the middle and call it a 5. We've got some areas that are a little dry, and you can't have a drought if you don't start a little dry. So we're there in some areas. Am I saying it's going to be a 2012 drought? Absolutely not. But I'm not a weatherman. I don't know, and sometimes I don't know if the weatherman knows what's going to happen. We just got to do the best with what we know. And right now, I do see in this area, backyard itis tells me that, hey, we're going to have a good crop. I think Kentucky's right. going to have a really good crop. So here, I think we want to, especially over the next 2 to 3 weeks, if the rest of the country develops like Kentucky does, I can actually see, you see the farmers starting to lay into the market just a little bit. With selling some more 21 crop, just because, as a crop develops, the farmer gets a little more comfortable letting loose.
Right, right. National Weather Service 6 to 10-day outlook. This is for May 10th through the 14th. Has got those below normal temperatures across the entire Corn Belt, Andrew. We've got above normal precipitation in Nebraska, southern two-thirds of Iowa, most of Illinois, Indiana. In your part of the world, we've got a below normal precip expected up in North Dakota and northern Minnesota. But boy, this looks like cool and with some moisture in it. It's hard to get fired up and anxious about a drought when it's not in the forecast, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's very true. Andrew, again, thank you for your flexibility here this afternoon. I really appreciate you, man. And we'll get together and talk again real soon.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. That is Andrew Jackson, Producer's Hedge, right here. Okay. Wow. What a show. For Tyne Morgan and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, big thank you to Vice Admiral Dr. Vivek Murthy, the U.S. Surgeon General, for coming on the show. Tomorrow morning, we got Jim Minturk. Tomorrow afternoon, Jamie Kwocky, right here on AgriTalk.